on September 22nd, 2005. And members present are Representative Anderson, Representative Gardner, and myself, Wilson. And online is Representative Seaton.
Yeah.
What did I say?
23rd.
Ah, 23rd, September 23rd, sorry. And Representatives McGuire and Cisna are absent on travel status. So we have at least enough of us that we can discuss some of these. Okay. If Representative Gatto, I hear you're online.
That's correct.
Now, we are going to be bringing before us a committee substitute for House Bill 271. We're not going to act on it, but we are going to discuss it. And if Representative Gatto and Seaton, if you would tell us where you're at, we will fax you the committee substitute.
Well, Gatto, I'm at the LIO in Wasilla.
All right.
Okay.
Probably looking for a fax number.
Yep.
I've got that.
She says she's got that.
Okay, good.
Gina's on the ball here. Representative Seaton, where are you?
I'm at home, and I do have that if it's the Y version.
That's fine.
I have it.
Great. That's what we want. That's what we're going to deal with. So, okay. All right. We'll get that to you right away, Representative Gatto.
Thank you.
Our moderator today is Gene Miller, and before we start, I'd like to remind everyone that to identify yourselves before you start speaking, not here so much, but anyone that wants to testify, because they are recording all this in Juneau, and it would help them immensely if you make sure that you state your name before you testify. Our agenda today is Committee Substitute for House Bill 271. Title is Limit Overtime for Registered Nurses, and we will be discussing that. However, before we move on to the agenda, I'd like to hear some. Like to have the committee hear some from the department on just the status of a couple things. There is a long-term care study going on, and I'd kind of like to know the status of that, and also the status of the personal care attendant resolutions, and actually just where they are in the process. And Janet Clark, could you give us that information?
Hello, Representative Wilson. This is Janet Clark with the Department of Health and Social Services, for the record. I do have information on the long-term care study. We have awarded that contract to the Public Consulting Group, PCG, as they're known, so that work will get underway. Unfortunately, Representative Wilson and the committee, I am not as up to speed on the personal care attendant regulation process, other than I know that the team and group is reviewing the public comments that were extensive. We had extensive public hearings, and all of that information had to be transcribed. And we also had very extensive written comments that are being reviewed to see if there should be changes to the regulations. So that's the extent of what I know about the personal care attendant regulations and the long-term care study.
All right, thank you. I know I talked to somebody, and I know all of these are quite a while, because once they get to the final determination of what the department thinks is going to go on, then they send it to the Department of Law to make sure all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, I guess. So that usually takes about a month also, so it's going to be a while yet. So probably by the time we have session starting in January, it'll be all ready for us. So, and I can't remember who I talked to this week, but someone told me that that they thought that they would be able to put something in effect by maybe December 1st, or it might be January, depending on how long things took. So, okay, at the last meeting that we had, we discussed quite a long time all the pros and cons of the different aspects of the bill itself. And Representative Seaton, you had a concern about the triple overtime, and that's what we addressed in this committee substitute. Do you want to go into that and explain why you wanted that amendment and a little bit about it?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is Representative Seaton, and from the hearing we heard from very definite concerns from the healthcare industry that having the triple overtime paid to nurses could have the unintended consequences of reducing voluntary overtime in some cases just by human nature, that if you can get paid twice as much by having to do mandatory instead of volunteering for overtime, that that's an unintended consequence, actually increasing the use of mandatory overtime. And so what we did, what I proposed in this amendment to you was that we take that and keep the overtime amount paid to nurses exactly the same, but then take a like amount and put that in as part of the fine. So the fine would be then based on hours as well as a set amount. And so we have those three provisions under the enforcement that says then that, and everybody can read that, but basically says that the penalty will be paid, will be the amount equal to the overtime paid to the nurse. And so that means that we don't have a unintended consequence of stimulating people to not do voluntary overtime because they don't have an economic gain out of it, and get back to the purpose that you had in the bill of giving a consequence for people that were requiring over mandatory overtime but not have those that unintended consequence.
Okay, does everybody understand that? Because that was, and I think that's a good change. So that's where kind of we're at right now. And
And, Madam Chair, just for everybody's understanding, that's on page 3 of the CS, on number C, which is under enforcement, offenses, and penalties, and that's included in one sections 1, 2, and 3 under C, starting on page line 14.
And that really makes me feel more comfortable, too, because I think most nurses definitely, you know, would not do that. But you never know, and we just don't want to put anybody into a position where it's tempting them to say, well, no, I don't think I'll do overtime, because if they wait and are forced to do it, then they get triple time. So I think that is a good change that we've made. We had a few things last time that we kind of talked up, and I think, Mike, you were going to, you know, look into a few things for us. Why don't you come forward and tell us about what you found when you did some little bit of research? We're handing out. Mike,
can I get another one that I can send to the Yangabit?
We'll send you Paul and Rep. Gatto. We'll be sending these to you. Mike is handing out data here. It says historical negotiated wage summaries, increase summary. So.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's Rep. Gatto. I have the sections 1, 2, and 3 that Representative Seaton referred to, but I don't have the CS, so I don't see what the changes are. Can you just briefly describe the changes in sections 1, 2, and 3? And obviously, it has to do with the triple time.
We faxed that to you, so you should have that. Ask them to check their fax machine.
Well, them is just me. So I did check it. There's nothing there.
Oh, sorry. Did you get the memo? Did you get the memo that goes along with it?
No, my fax machine's been relatively quiet.
Okay. Well, we're trying to correct that right now.
And, Madam Chair, if you just go ahead and fax it to my legislative office here in Homer, my staff will be there to look at
great.
That as well.
Okay, Mike, go ahead and proceed, and we'll, if they don't get that, I'll go over it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Tibbles with the Department of Administration. The spreadsheet that I just handed out should be a spreadsheet that looks familiar to you. It's a spreadsheet that we use when we present collective bargaining agreements, as well as the spreadsheet that was attached to a bill that passed this session regarding salaries for the exempt and partially exempt employees. So I don't need to run through all the comments, but what I did want to address from the last hearing was that there was a comment regarding a pay reduction, and as you can see from the as you start from the first column with the first collective bargaining XE and PX, those are the partially exempt employees. Then it goes XJ, and then the third column is GGU, and the GGU contract includes our nursing staff. As you can see, over time, the historical data is from 1984 till the present, and actually going forward to 2006, the contract increase that will be applied as of July 1 of next year, you can see the increases, percentage increases in the salaries over time. So I don't know if you want to, you can add up the numbers for yourself over whatever time period you'd like to see, but I think this just goes to address that comment last time regarding a decrease in salaries. You can see that the salaries, and there's the CPI change over on the left. You can see the salaries in comparison to CPI, there have been a number of increases. Even more recently, this last round of negotiations with a 0.22 was offered and a 0.15 and 2 was accepted by the union membership and ratified by the legislature.
Okay. Now, do you know, I think the thing that we were talking about is that there's still, in some areas, are a huge difference. I know in Sitka, I was told that the difference from the nurses get paid at the Pioneer Home versus at the hospital is $10 an hour difference. That's a huge difference. And so that's why I was wanting to be able to find out what the comparisons were across the state from the hospitals and Pioneer Homes or API. So were you able to gather any of that data?
Well, I believe, Madam Chair, that we have collected some information regarding our facilities versus some private sector facilities. And I believe submitted that at the last hearing. Was it additional information beyond that?
Well, I guess I was expecting a little bit more, a little further information than when that was. But I'll.
I'd be happy to go back and provide the main testimony I wanted to provide today were to provide an update on some of the actions that we've taken, the process that is in place to address some of the issues regarding recruitment and salaries. I have some points I'd like to go over and share with the committee.
Okay.
This sheet, I'd be happy to look into any additional information for you. This sheet, I just wanted to correct that one comment about the decrease in salaries and show you over time the percentage of increases that have been negotiated.
Now, can you explain, because I know they really felt that they got some money and then that kind of disappeared. Can you explain that what happened in that period of time?
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm making an assumption that you're referring to the standby pay issue. I'm not sure.
It might have something to do with that $1,200 lump sum. I'm not sure what it was. We might have somebody in the audience that can kind of address that a little bit, because last time they talked about that, and I think it was at API, I'm not sure, but that they got a pay raise and then it actually was taken away from them. Maybe we can elaborate on that a little bit more this time, because I kind of want to get to the bottom of that and see what happened. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just for the record, just for a refresher for audience members and committee members and those on telephone, could you just go through, just in a couple minutes, Mike, what you think the rationale is for this bill? I mean, maybe the history. Has there been, because I'll be honest, I can't remember. I mean, I know we've talked about this bill, but obviously I know nurses and collective bargaining and the dynamics of that, but I don't remember. It appears that you're facilitating this. Feel that there's some inequity in either overtime or that process.
Well, you know what, I could probably
do that real quick.
Yeah.
But just yeah, the basis, because I'm
okay. Okay, the reason the bill is even exists is because the nurses from API, the Pioneer Home, and Corrections, and the nurses organization, the state nurses organization, came, but they came kind of supporting those nurses, but it was the nurses from those three entities. Yeah, and I actually didn't have any nurses from any private hospitals that were complaining at all about this. So this is basically state employees that were concerned because the state was having a hard time recruiting nurses, and so there was a shortage for them.
Okay.
And so they were in a bind, and so they had to, nurses had to work more than one shift. And, of course, everybody tries to get nurses to volunteer, but after, you volunteer when you're needed, whenever you can, but when it goes on for months and months and months, you pretty soon are to the point where you really don't want to volunteer anymore because you're exhausted.
Yeah.
And so what was happening is that the state was having to mandate that they, you're going to work this shift and you're going to work the next shift too because we don't have anybody to be there, and so you're going to have to. And there's been lots of actually research done on this very topic across the nation, and it's been proven that when nurses work overtime, and especially for long periods, when it's a sustained thing, you can do it once in a while, and it's no big deal. But when it's sustained every week, you're having to do it, it's really not healthy for the nurse herself, and it's not really, it's a safety issue for patients. And so many states have passed laws. I think there's 13, I'm not sure, but I think there's 13 states that have passed laws, no mandatory overtime. And because health-wise, I mean, it could be a matter of life and death, depending on the situation. And so that's in a nutshell, that's what's happened.
Okay.
So we're kind of looking at this and trying to see if there's some way we can deal with it. I put a bill in front of us here, and we're willing to look at it, change it around, work it out, just to see what we can do to make things better and to work on it. And what we've come up to is the state would like to do that, but they would like to make some changes. But the nurses belong to a union that is involved, and there's a lot of other healthcare workers in it, and they can't just change the pay for the nurses because of the union negotiations and whatnot want everybody in that union, and so that's kind of where we're at.
Okay.
So, in a nutshell, and
so you're saying the nursing association or the union itself, that collective bargaining unit, whereas they agree with the spirit of the bill, you're saying there may not be unequivocal endorsement from the nurses anyway because they belong with other occupations in there.
Well, there might be nurses' aides in there. There might be, I don't know. There might be X-ray technicians and lab technicians, and all a whole scope, that covers it. And so maybe some of them are par with their peers in the local sector, in the private sector, but not so necessarily the RNs.
I hear you.
So we're looking at RNs right now, and that's where we're
focusing.
Yeah. So does that...
Yep, that answers it.
Representative Gardner, do you have a question?
Yeah, I have some questions about the chart.
Okay.
And for Mr. Tibbles, I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. GGU is the name of the union that represents the nurses?
Through the chair. GGU is collective bargaining. It's,
okay.
It's ASEA is the union, but it's commonly referred to as a general government unit. I'm sorry, and that comprises our largest group and most diverse group of state employees. We would have clerical staff even throughout our agencies in that, as well as the nurses. So, like the chair had mentioned, it's very diverse. We have a lot of job classifications that exist within that unit.
Okay, and in follow-up, just for my own understanding, the CPI change, if it goes up, say, 2% in 85 and GGU wage increase was 5%, we don't know what happened in the immediately preceding years, but that would have been a good year, and then there was no pay raise until 1990. Is that, am I understanding this correctly? When it went up 3.3 for that
mm-hmm.
classification. So during those years where the CPI change was really small, but there still was an increase, they basically kind of lost ground. Is that?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, that's correct. There was a, you can see one asterisk here in 1987 where the contract that was submitted to the legislature was disapproved at 3.8%. But generally when, you know, 2 or 3 year contract submitted, sometimes it's a 1 year contract to the legislature. Not always approved. Sometimes it takes multiple years to negotiate, like we mm-hmm. saw this year on a number of our contracts. Then ultimately we agreed on we offered at 0.22, and 0.5% was negotiated back for some other considerations. But so we saw 0.1.5 and 2, and you can compare that against inflation. A lot of times that's just a product of the financial situation of the state at the time. You know, was
right. But bottom line is that over time, compared to 20 years ago, the members of this bargaining unit have lost ground as the CPI increased. I mean, it looks pretty dramatic. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Continue, Madam Chair. Okay. Just to provide an update to the committee on actions that we've been involved with over the last several weeks since the last hearing, I'll kind of break them down into several categories. One is on the recruitment front. We've had Department of Administration and Department of Health and Social Services have collectively had a number of meetings trying to forward some initiatives on how we can address recruitment. And one thing that we have done is we've reorganized the staff within the Division of Personnel and Department Administration to set up a professional recruitment position. This will be a position that will be solely focused on those very hard to recruit areas like nurses, and look at what has been done in the past and provide some recommendations to the hiring managers on ways that they can improve the recruitment process. I think we've seen kind of spotty recruitment, you know, some areas there's been good recruitment, good advertisement, and maybe not as well in other areas. So we try to provide a real consistent, comprehensive recruitment effort and have that focus through one individual who's not only very knowledgeable in recruitment, with a lot of experience, but be able to have the time to focus on that. And that's a key piece of, there's just so much going on within the Division of Personnel, providing support to all the agencies.
Do you know, have any RNs been recruited during this time? I know we haven't gotten very much, have any RNs been hired?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure what the status. I'd have to defer back to Health and Social Service and the hiring managers there to
okay.
find out if they've hired any RNs within the last several weeks.
Okay.
I know our individual the position that we're attempting to fill will come on approximately November 1st.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to take a little bit of time to gear up. But we have seen some success in special recruitments. I can mention the effort in the Department of Corrections, where they really did a very, very public, I'm not sure if you're aware, but they did a very public, and you probably saw quite a few of the ads on TV, recruitment effort, and it brought in a lot of applicants.
Good.
I mean, they had consistently had recruitment problems and turned that around, and they got a number. Now, their minimum qualifications are quite different than an RN, we understand. But we did see that looking at recruitment a little bit differently really did pay off for the Department of Corrections. So hope to bring some of that creativity into a position to focus them on other ways to get out into the country, because we're competing with so many different other entities. So.
Representative Anderson?
No, I was waving the paper.
Oh. Okay.
Madam Chair, this is Janet Clark from Department of Health and Social Services.
Yes, Janet, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just want to let the committee know some progress that we've made in the Department of Health and Social Services. Since your hearing a few weeks ago, we've had a couple of sessions with our head nursing management staff, and we've had a comprehensive meeting with the University of Alaska and the nursing school, talking to them about what they're doing for other private providers and what the state and particularly health and social services can do to try to increase our recruitment efforts related to the nursing students that are going through the University of Alaska. And we have a whole number of tools and management things that we're going to try and we're going to propose, including trying to increase the number of nurses that go through clinical rotations through state facilities. We're looking at whether we should develop a stipend program for nurses, tuition reimbursement, or a loan repayment program. Also looking at other mechanisms, but we've had some very good discussions with the University of Alaska, and then internally with our nurse managers of both public health nursing, the Pioneer Homes, and API. So I think we're fairly excited about that, and then with what the Division of Personnel can do, we think we're going to be able to do a little more thinking out of the box with our recruiting tools so that we can maybe get specialty training and use some of these other mechanisms that we haven't used yet in the state to help recruit and retain nurses.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. I was reading just yesterday, it was a brochure that was trying to recruit teachers, and it said that because I would think that nurses, this would even be more critical because our shortage is percentage-wise worse with nurses. But what we have done in the past to get doctors to come to Alaska and even PAs to go, especially to go into the bush, we've done things like pay their tuition. We've done lots of different things, and even recruited them from that area. Told them we'd pay for their schooling if they would come back and teach practice anyway. And so we're going to have to do the same thing. We're going to have to do the same type of things with nurses and eventually with teachers in specific areas also. So I'm glad to see that you're looking at it in that way, and I think that's a good positive step forward. Thank you, Janet. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition, the Division of Personnel is creating a single point of contact for inquiries regarding employment opportunities for nurses. And this sounds very simple, but it's not something that we're doing now. Somebody may inquire into Department of Corrections about a nursing position that we have an open recruitment. Right now, we're not talking to them about other nursing opportunities within the state. And we've got, you know, some of the ones that you've mentioned, API or public health nurses. So we're going to try to take a step back and look at a bigger view of it and see if maybe if someone's not appropriate or isn't interested or isn't hired for one area of nursing within the state, maybe we could use them in another area. So that's also something that we're working on. In addition, we're having conversations with some of the hiring managers on how to best market the state positions. We realize that some of the benefits of working for the state of Alaska aren't widely known out there. I mean, I think there's more consideration than just the salary. Salary is certainly a big thing. That's the one thing people look at, how much is the salary for this position when they're considering. But there are other things. We have very generous leave, and there is a cash value to that leave, and that's not something that's factored in. A lot of these individuals may not be able to take the full amount of leave, so it may be very appropriate they do cash out some of that. There's SBS and deferred comp and PERS, holidays that aren't necessarily offered in some of the other facilities. So I think, you know, developing a whole package of what the state can offer, it will look a lot more attractive, even though we may not be able to be a market leader in salary. And even if we do move up the salaries, it may be within a very short period of time when we're not, you know, when we start falling behind, because it's just very difficult for the state of Alaska to maintain a market edge on that in salaries. We're working with Department of Health and Social Service on developing recruitment materials. We'll have materials, I believe, by November that will highlight the career opportunities that are available to nurses within the state of Alaska. So I know that the Department of Health and Social Services produces very, very good materials, so we're excited about that and getting that out to the public.
So. Well, are you going to be able to, like, put it into the high schools so that counselors have it for students that are trying to decide where they want to go for training in for their futures and things like
lots
that.
Lots of opportunities, job fairs, et cetera.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next, on the compensation front, switching, that's pretty much the extent of my comments on the recruitment. On the compensation front, We have a draft policy that is currently under review, and it should be implemented by mid-October. This policy through the Division of Personnel will allow hiring managers to be pre-approved to offer advanced step placements. As you're familiar with, maybe even your own staff, who have within a given range, you can have A, B, C, D steps. This would allow hiring managers to be pre-approved to offer advanced step placements. That can be a considerable amount of increase. And we can do that because there is a demonstrated recruitment problem. Typically, we get there through exceptional qualifications or recruitment challenges. Obviously, we have recruitment challenges here, so we can change the policy to make that happen a little quicker.
Yeah, because sometimes you can grab somebody. If you don't give them a definite yes, they're going to keep looking until they get one somewhere. So that's great.
We've heard the criticism that an individual is considering a job with the state in the private sector, and you know, the state puts in a request for an advanced step placement, and by the time they hear back, then they're already accepted a job at a private entity. So I think we really can speed up the process here, and as we have such a demonstrated recruitment problem, allow that advanced step placement to happen quickly.
Great. Representative Gardner, you had a question?
Thank you. Advanced step placement. I have very little history with state employment. What is advanced step placement?
What we'd be talking about here, advanced step placement would be authorizing the hiring managers to go up to a G step. So generally when your first years, when you're starting with state employment, say you come in at an A step, and you don't start out on the pay schedule. But if you were range 21A, you'd work a year, and then you'd be eligible for a B, assuming that you provided progressively greater value to the state and your good evaluations. And then next year, you'd go from B to C to D to E to F. There is, within our own rules, we do have the ability to move out the steps to a certain extent. We can't go into longevity. Longevity is governed by different rules, but we can go into, if you want to break them up, like usually A, depending on the contract, it gets kind of complicated, but A through F or A through G here, you'd have your longevity steps, and then you get into different rules. But anyway, I apologize, I'm being as clear as I can, but this would allow us, within that lower section, A through G, would allow us to place people in that range. So
for which they would not ordinarily qualify?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
And that's a little higher up the pay scale,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Correct. Okay. Not everybody comes in at an A step. We understand there's, people come in at C steps. This might be an opportunity to bring them up at a little bit higher, up to a G step.
Thank you. Great.
And then I know Mila Cosgrove, the Director of Division of Personnel, testified at the last hearing, and I'll just mention again that we are working on a system that will allow us to introduce some market data in how we assign ranges. There's two processes. Through collective bargaining, we'll negotiate a dollar amount per range. But then there's also the process of assigning a range to a particular job, whether they are, range 20, range 19, 16. And that's really based on the nature, variety, and the complexity of work as compared to other state jobs. So what our statutory charge is to have alignment across job classifications. So you compare the nature, variety, and complexity of work, and you assign these job classifications. Right now, our system doesn't allow us to introduce the market data. We're looking at options, and we've been working with Department of Law on ways that we can introduce more of that of the market influence, so we can adjust the classifications. And then regarding current employees, a few things that I can touch on. More of Health and Social Service. I wasn't sure if Janet was going to be testifying, but a couple of things that I'd been recommended to pass along to the committee is that the Department of Health and Social Service Management is reviewing the workflow process to assure that they're using staff resources most efficiently. This would be time management and various things. They have two nurses performing a job, how many LPNs, what kind of groupings, just those evaluating those type of situations. And you know, is a nurse RN really required, or can we use LPN? You know, what kind of changes can be made? Health and Social Services is collecting information about current working conditions and what non-monetary changes might create more desirable working conditions. There are some things like flexible staffing we've seen from NASB, the National Association of State Personnel Executives. They've talked about what are some things other states have done that have been really attractive, and flexible staffing has been one thing. Not sure if that's, you know, it's something that we can look at. More training has been something that has been mentioned. You know, it's something that we can look at, discussing management and supervisory training. And then hopefully those three things with working with the hiring managers and the staff, we could come up with some changes that would make the conditions, you know, improve the working conditions for the nurses.
Have they considered at all? I'm not sure what this is even called, but it's like work sharing. In other words, you might get two part-time people that would be willing to come in and just work part-time but share the same shifts in some ways, and you might be able to do that in some instances easily. In some instances you might not be, but in the evening it might be a little bit easier to have one nurse work for 4 hours and another nurse work for 4 hours, and I don't know when, if it was a 12-hour shift, that sharing and figure maybe nurses could come together even themselves and figure out how they would be willing to do it so that they could work part-time but yet have a steady job within the hours that they would prefer for themselves. So I don't know how that would work. I know in many other jobs that works real well. Now, I'm not sure how it would work with nursing, but it would be definitely something to an option that you could even offer the nurses possibly, or when you're, you know, when you're advertising that work sharing, or I don't know what that's really, job sharing. There you go, job sharing. That's right. So that's a possibility that you know it may not work, but you might find out, hey, there may be women out there, because we all know that they're out there. We've got them out there that aren't working, that if they found the right situation, they'd be glad to. So, did you have anything else, Mike?
That really concludes my remarks, unless you have any additional questions.
Okay. Oh, we have Representative Corrin. Are you online now?
Yes, I am. I do apologize for being late, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you for joining us. We'll get you a... where are you at?
I'm in Wasilla.
Okay. We'll send you... Is Representative Gottle there, too?
No.
Okay. Oh, they're okay. Well, we'll try to get. I'll tell somebody to. Okay, he says it's already on its way. Good. We're looking at a committee substitute. We haven't officially adopted it because we were short one person for a quorum, but we are discussing it. And actually, we just have it before us. And the change was that before in the committee substitute we had, or in the committee in the actual bill, one of the. Trying to think of the right word. One of the
sounds like you need a cup of coffee, Peggy.
Okay. parts of the bill was that if the nurse was forced to have the mandatory overtime, there would be a fine of triple time.
Okay.
And just so that nurse wouldn't say, well, no, I'm not going to work overtime, and then she would be forced to, and then she would get the triple overtime. We've changed that.
Okay.
And so that's on page 3. And so that the only thing that was changed in the bill itself was on page 3, between lines 14 and 26.
Your pause was what you were trying to say, like that was a stumbling block to getting the bill through?
Well,
point was?
You know, what we want to do, and what I want to do anyway, is... I want, because the hospitals they're a little worried about this, and rightly so, because we all know that the problem with shortage of nurses, this isn't going to get better. This is going to get much worse. So the hospitals in the private arena, are a little concerned about this. And so I understand that. And so I'm very, very open for any changes that we can make in this so that people are more comfortable, but we still are trying to address not forcing nurses to work overtime. So
that's why Lori looks ill in the audience. Lori Hermit, Providence.
And, but anyway, so even after today's meeting, we're really just, we just want to get everything on the table to see what are things that can be done. And I'm real happy that the department is really, it's obvious that they're really trying to deal with this and trying to see if they can make things better. And so I still would like to hear from people even after this meeting, because we won't have another meeting until January. And make sure that if you have any ideas or any possibilities, I think this is going to take thinking out of the box. There's no doubt about it. And so if anyone has any ideas, please contact me, because we're willing to work, change, negotiate. This is not the finished product by a long shot. So if there's anybody online that would like to testify, or anybody in the room, please sign in if you'd like to testify. If you're here just to listen in, you're welcome, and we're glad to have you. But if you'd like to testify, please sign in so I know. Let me see. Is there anyone else? Rebecca Bowling, who is president of the Alaska Nurses Association. Rebecca, you wanted to make some comments, didn't you?
Madam Chair, this is Representative Seaton.
Yes, Representative Seaton.
Would it be okay if I expressed a couple of concerns first, and if we have people testifying, maybe they can talk about them?
That would be fine, but can you get closer to your microphone, because we can't hear you very well.
Yeah, sure. Is that better?
Much.
Okay, good. The first thing that I wanted to say is, I'm really glad that the state has been working on looking at ways to help on this nursing shortage. I think that's critical. But talking about the bill here, I'm wondering whether people would address whether this is an issue of collective bargaining. I know that the talking about the hospital down here, they represented the nurses by a different association, and according to administration here, that they work on this through.
Speak up again. We can't hear you very well.
Oh, okay. And they work on this issue in their collective bargaining agreement, and I'm wondering whether the nurses actually have the ability to influence and to set these regulations through their bargaining unit, and whether that's where this should be. So that's one thing I'd like people to address. The other two things are, first of all, there's no differentiation in this bill for the number of nurses in a facility. Rural health care facilities would be, that had very few nurses. I don't see anything here that has any kind of an exemption or any kind of any differentiation between a hospital that has hundreds of nurses and someone that has two. Also, the next thing that I'm concerned about is under the definition on page 3 of healthcare facilities, it looks like we're, I guess if we go to the page 4, line 7, or primary care outpatient facility, it sounds to me like that's a doctor's office. On line 2, intermediate care facilities, I want to find out what those are. We're talking about long-term care facilities. And I'm also wondering, since it says any federal, state or private, does this also include Native Health Service and within the state of Alaska? And I want to find out the reach of this bill. So those are the three main things that I would like to see, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. You asked so many questions, and I was going to talk about one of them specifically, and I can't even remember what.
Okay, the first one was collective bargaining, whether this is
actually an issue for collective bargaining. The second was the number of nurses in a facility, and the third one is, you know, what is the full scope of facilities that this bill would cover?
Okay. I think that's a real good question about the bargaining, the collective bargaining units, and that's something that these questions we'll definitely check into, so that when we resume our deliberations, when we get back to Juneau in January, that we will dig into this a little bit more and have the answers to that. I don't know about collective bargaining and whether the nurses themselves have much say in that. I don't know, so I will find that out. As far as making a distinction between large and small facilities, I know we did make a distinction with the critical access hospitals, and that was mainly because most of those were in areas that there wasn't any other access, and the hospital was the only, you know, that was the only hospital for like on our island. We have a critical access hospital, but it's because, you know, it's really hard to get anywhere else when you're on an island. So, and I'm not sure, we haven't had anybody bring that forward as far as differentiation between smaller and larger hospitals in areas where there's more than one hospital. So we can look into that. If anybody is here or online that can add to that, we'd be glad to hear from you. Otherwise, we'll get those questions and make sure that we have the answers when we get back.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And, you know, we're talking about this in terms of hospitals mostly, but on page 4, we're talking about primary care outpatient facility, and I'm wondering to make sure, and long-term care facilities, public health nurses, I'm wondering if we can get a definition of the scope of the bill from maybe the department, and whether within our definition that we currently have, if that also covers doctor's offices. Thank you.
Okay. Good comments. Okay. And Rebecca Bowling had to go to work, so she isn't with us any longer. And I hate that because she had some comments, and I didn't realize that she was going to have to be leaving us. Is there anyone else that would like to have any testimony online or in the room? Okay. Does the committee have any comments or any?
Just appreciate your bringing this forward again, because I think this saves committee time. You know, if we have Representative Seaton's questions answered, and appreciate Mike Kibble's review. I mean, it just makes it more efficient, which I love, because I hate long meetings during session that we can answer this in the interim.
Yeah, so it does leave us, you know, I really encourage the hospitals to get with me in the meantime to let me know your real concerns, because I know they're there, but we really haven't heard strongly, I don't think. So make sure that between now and session, that we get together and maybe can bat around some of this a little bit, so that we can come up with maybe some to make this bill a much better bill. I know that in the lower 48, one of the things that when Representative Seaton was talking, they do actually in some of the states that have come up with no mandatory overtime, they've come up with all kinds of things that I'm not sure we want to get into. But maybe we do. I don't know. But some of them even say there has to be so many nurses per so many patients, and go into that type of thing. And that wasn't my intent to go that far, but it might be something that we could at least talk about and think about. So in other states, they've gone, in many states, they've gone much further than this bill does. I really don't want to go any further than I have to, but I think now is the time to address this, because the problem's going to get worse. It's not going to get better. So we need to know how we're going to deal with it when it comes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Seaton did have some list back there, and I thought as long as we were doing some investigations of
which nurses in which facilities, we might also bring up school nurses at the same time.
Okay.
As long as we're going to be doing some investigation of, you know, what constitutes a...
That would be disastrous. I mean, we will definitely do this. The reason I'm kind of joking when I say that, but I know some states say that every school has to have a nurse, and they say how many nurses per how many students, because I'm a nationally certified school nurse, and I know that in some states that you have to have so many nurses with so many kids, and Alaska, most schools can't afford nurses, and so
right.
Most schools don't have them. So
there's
a few, I know, but not very many. I think in Anchorage there's some. I don't know how many other schools have them. But
I think MatSU is probably the most generous in that we have one in each school, and Anchorage, I believe, they share a couple or two or three schools depending on the sizes.
Where is our Carl, this is Tom Anderson. Where's our favorite MatSU school nurse, your wife, Mrs. Gatto? What school is she at?
She is busy working at Pioneer Peak as we speak. But, you know, in the first week of school, she is being paid for one day, but in order to get the work done, has to show up for all five. And so that's another issue. Is that considered uncompensated overtime? I mean, they didn't demand that she showed up, but she couldn't get her work done unless she showed up.
Yeah.
And really, that's really another question, too.
Not
is
my,
that
well.
Coercion, where you give somebody more work than is possible to achieve? I mean, school couldn't start for a great many kids until she cleared them, and yet they only gave her the one day to do it.
I've been there, done that, so I understand. I was at a school where there were 4,000 students, and I was the only nurse in five different schools.
Yeah.
And, but just as I was leaving North Carolina actually put into place that there had to be so many nurses per so many students, and so there's more than one school nurse, in some schools, even depending on how big the school is. So,
right.
So we'll look into all this. A lot to look into, a lot to think about, and please, I mean, I really want to stress this very strongly, please contact me. I know there's some people that really have strong feelings here, and please let me know about them before session starts.
And Chair Wilson, before you go, like Lori Herman's here, but you have Alaska Regional, you have Bartlett Memorial, you have Fairbanks, Kenai, all the way down the line. If those, either their association or those specific hospitals could send something in, that would be instructive for us.
Yeah.
Because you don't want them to come out during session and say we're opposed to the bill after we've worked all interim.
Good point.
Yeah, you know, if I, this Representative
Gatto,
if I could just add one more point, the new hospital in the valley here will open at the January 31st. They will have, no doubt, a demand for more nurses than they have carried over from the previous facility, if indeed they keep the previous facility open at the same time. I'm just kind of curious, you know, they say the facility will open January 31st, but maybe the building will be available. I'm curious to know if the manning of the building will be available. So we are going to see a demand also from that front. And the director's name is Stephen Norman. And it might be worth, maybe if I get a chance, give him a call and see what the story is and tell him, maybe give him a heads up on this bill that's coming before us.
Definitely. And if anyone is rather shy about testifying, please know that if you send in written testimony, we will I will give it to everyone in the committee and that they'll have it in the packet. So that sometimes is a little more comfortable for people. So
right.
we're very willing to do it that way and just include it in the packet. So.
And I'm not on the committee, but I sure would appreciate being kept in the lineup.
Okay. I will duly note that.
Thank you.
Well, without that, then, it doesn't appear that we're going to have any more testimony today. I appreciate everyone coming. This was a very quick meeting. I thought we would have more, and fully expected a little bit more from the nurses. And we will have our next meeting in January during session. So. As of 9:18, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Good job, Peggy.